that to be approved as a code change in Oregon and in California. It's been the 1997 AISC 97 seismic provisions have been adopted in lieu of the stuff in here. And it just goes on and on and on. And Mr. Miller has been a part of all this continual foot dragging. There's a thing down there for seismic retrofit. And in Oregon, we're getting ourselves in an uncomfortable position that people are opposing seismic retrofit for houses and for existing buildings because, for instance, the retrofit standard, they use this map. They don't use the weakened Oregon map. And one of the things that happened after Northridge, it was found that the foundations where they were bolted to the sill split. And one of the reasons it split is the contractor, in order to make that...
Excuse me, Mr. Bailos, so the point is that you're against these three people.
Well, yeah. That's very compelling reasons.
Fairly clear. Have you been in contact with any of the members of the Senate? It'll be tomorrow afternoon at 2:30.
Pardon?
The confirmation vote will be tomorrow afternoon, and the floor session starts at 2:30. Have you been in contact with any other members? That's what you need to do. You know, these people require 16 votes, so if you want to lobby against them, that's where you need to go lobby.
What is the first? Does the committee make a recommendation?
Committee will make a recommendation, just an in block recommendation, but there are just three votes on the floor. We need 13 more, so that's what I recommend you do.
Okay.
All right, Senator Erfler.
Yeah, I would like to know your qualifications. You seem to be very knowledgeable about this stuff. And I'm not on this committee, so I'm sort of filling in today. But I noticed that this the structural board is two-family dwellings and prefab structures. It doesn't seem to be like any high-rises or large buildings. It's primarily homes and small prefab units.
Well, this board does deal with high-rises, and they're part of this. Oregon adopts this and calls it the Oregon Structural Specialty Code.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with high rises.
You must have misinformation in our pamphlet if that's the case, because it says here all they do is work on one or two family dwellings.
No.
So it's more than that?
It's the two codes. One's called the Oregon Structural Specialty Code, which is commercial and everything. And then there's the one and two family dwelling code, which is called a prescriptive code. In other words, an engineer will use this code and will design the size of the members and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
One and two family dwelling codes that says use 2x6 on the rafters and mm-hmm. put the bolts 6 feet apart on the sill and things like that.
And according to the information I have, again, it's an advisory board to building codes.
That's true. So it holds the public hearings on the,
mm-hmm.
and it's their committees that are...
But isn't it up to the director as to adopting the codes or not, or do they...
Right.
So this is an advisory group. They don't make the laws or anything. They apparently have a lot of influence on what does get passed.
Well, just recently they've actually countermanded and forced the director to start take a hard look at the International Building Code. Because they wanted to study it to death, and the leadership of the Oregon Building Efficiency Association.
If they're advisory only, the director still should have the final.
He does have the final
say on it. And I noticed that Mr. Miller is a structural engineer.
Right.
Mr. Day is a home builder.
Right.
And when they're working in two or three family homes, or two member single or double use of homes. It doesn't seem like that would be a lot. Take a lot of knowledge to build a structure that meets codes.
That's just who they take care of.
They take care of the earthquakes and so on. But you're saying that they do more than just one or two family dwelling homes?
Yes, this board and the structural engineering committee that Mr. Miller has chaired for a number of years handle the two codes.
Well, if they do, they're outside their purview, so we will take a look at that.
If you, that's a sign that building code structure board shall assist the director of Department of Consumer Business Services in administering a structural mechanical of one and two family dwellings, prefabricated structures, and energy programs described in this chapter. So it doesn't seem like they would have an awful lot to say about buildings other than just the one or two family.
Well, are there commas in there? Because there's Oregon structure, that's what it's called. It's called the Oregon Structural Specialty Code. And then the other code is called the one and two family dwelling code.
And this one just covers the one and two family dwellings and prefabricated structures and energy programs. But it doesn't talk about anything other than that in this particular advisory board. And if I'm wrong, I don't know.
What's the ORS?
But we,
455.1.
We aren't confused. You're against these three members.
Pardon?
I'm not confused. You're against these three members. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. That was a good job putting that package together. That was quite intensive.
Well, I thought maybe that Senate really never had a chance to see what these boards do or how they make the decision. I thought that should be.
You get to start working on the rest of them. They'll all be here tomorrow. Senator Atkinson.
Mr. Chair, I move that the appearance be waived and that the committee recommend the following appointments and reappointments to be confirmed by the Senate, with multiple appointments made to a single board or commission to be considered in block. Appointment of D. Staple to the Appraiser Certificate and Licensure Board. Reappointment of Ed Gormley to the State Apprenticeship and Training Council. The appointment of Frank Thompson to the Commission on Black Affairs. Appointments of Frank Armstrong and Ed Ripplinger, and the reappointments of John Boyce, Elizabeth Rousseau Rooney, and Philip Stockstad to the Commission for the Blind. The reappointment of Dale McCouth to the Board of Boiler Rules. Appointments of Martin Brown, Chuck Day, Raymond Miller, and the reappointments of James Coughlin and Steve Tucker to the Building Code Structures Board. Appointment of Michael Farrell to the Columbia River Gorge Commission. The reappointment of Richard Holvstad to the Construction Contractors Board. The appointments of Rosemary Carvejo, Sharon Dress, and Holly Scholes. And the reappointment of Sue Morningstar to the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery. The appointments of Nancy Tate and Jean Tate. And the reappointments of Carl Alton and Brett Wilcox to the Economic Community and Development Commission. The appointments of Sherry Asher and Tim Nickel, and the reappointment of Nathan Phillips to the Electrical and Elevator Board. The reappointment of Mark Reeve to the Environmental Quality Commission. The appointment of Zane Smith to the State Fish and Wildlife Commission. The appointment of Roger Bassett and Aaron Waltari, and the reappointment of James Listier to the State Board of Higher Education, the appointment of Amanda Vallejo, and the reappointments of Francisca Johnson Lavea, Davi Trevino, Juan Ortegon, Trinidad Ortez to the Commission of Hispanic Affairs, the appointment of Judith Williams Petrie, Williams Petrie, I think, to the State Housing Council, the appointment of Louise Berry to the Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability, the appointment of Yvonne Williams and the reappointment of Charlotte Herbert to the Trustee of the State Library, the reappointments of William Lycan, Elizabeth McKinley, Phyllis Rand, and Jean Williams to the Long-Term Care Advisory Committee, the reappointment of James Woody to the State Marine Board, the appointment of Lori Stargrove to the Board of Naturopathic Examiners, the reappointment of Stephen Bump Brummer and Renee Dumas to the Board of Examiners of Nursing Home Administrators, the appointment of Mary Decker and the reappointment of Annette Matthews to the Oregon Health Sciences University Board of Directors, the appointment of Bobby Connor to the State Parks and Recreation Commission, the appointment of Catherine Liu to the State Board of Pharmacy, the reappointment of Robert Kimes to the State Plumbing Board, the appointment of Dallas Cox to the Advisory Council on Podiatry, the reappointment of Gary Greger, Cheryl Scott, and Mike Walthrop to the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay Board of Commissioners, the reappointment of Ann Nelson to the Board of Commissioners to the Port of Portland, the reappointments of Vern Fats and Dorothy Moray to the Psychiatric Security Review Board, the reappointment of Jana Zeet to the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, the appointment of Michael Harmon and Jeanette Mann, and the reappointments of Ed Daniels, Rick Lewis, and Bob Livingston to the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training, the reappointment of Patty Williams to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, the appointment of Nancy Watt to the Teacher Standard and Practices Commission, the appointments of Katie Koba and Joe D'Alessandro to the Oregon Tourism Commission, the reappointment of Stuart Foster and Randall Pape to the Oregon Transportation Commission, the appointment of George Richardson and the reappointment of Kay Stepp to the TriMet Board, the appointment of Bobby Bruneau and the reappointment of Mark Schwinn to the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, the appointment of Candace Bartow and the reappointment of Addie Haynes to the Commission for Women, the appointments of Joseph Cox, John Howard, Michael Jordan, and Bobby Mink, and the reappointment of John Howard to the State Workforce Investment Board.
Very good. Senator Atkinson moves those people to those commissions and boards. And further discussion? Objection? Hearing none? So ordered. We'll close this.
No, we're still going, right?
Yeah. Okay. Captain Ball, or we need another one for him.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay. Captain Ball. Okay. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
You're quite an audience.
Well, for the record, my name is Lindsey Ball. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission has selected me as a candidate to be the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I'm here to partake in the confirmation hearing and process.
That you are. How are you going to fix this bucket of worms?
Well, there's several things that I think should be addressed in the agency, and we certainly worked on that in the 01 session. And I met with staff in the 1st of August to start to identify specific goals that we had in mind to bring the agency back in line. And the number one goal that we identified that we were going to take the task immediately was we are going to restore fiscal integrity to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. The measures that we've taken to do that internally is that prior to my appointment as director, the agency did not have a central budgeting process. We had an administrative services division that was responsible for budget and accounting, but we also had budget and accounting staff out in the divisions. and it wasn't necessarily coordinated between the divisions and the regions and the central budget office with respect to accountability with expenditures. So we have already brought that those people into one central location so we can start adhering to accountability with budget measures. We're also taking steps internally to the agency to match the program, the budget, and the position authority that we have in the agency, which is something that has been exceeded in the past. So with respect to fiscal integrity, those two action items are how we're going to address it internally. Externally, the legislature also put us on a very strict accountability measurement by requiring us to come to budget management and the legislative fiscal office once every 3 months to give a status of the budget, projections of expenditures in the accounting office of the agency. We will also come to the agency every 6 months and give a full report to the emergency board on the status of the agency's fiscal integrity. That's how we're going to take care of the first part. The second issue... the second issue that we're starting to deal with is that we need to come to grips with how we manage fish in Oregon with respect to the Endangered Species Act and the Oregon Plan. We have implemented a native fish conservation policy that is more prescriptive in nature and will identify certain watersheds and certain sections of watershed that we will manage fish for the Endangered Species Act to protect that wild component of the fish resource. In addition to that, we will also manage part of those watersheds or some watersheds for sport angling opportunities and commercial harvest. Now, if you want to really get in deep into this subject, I certainly can. I don't know how far you want me to go with that. But that will be the native fish conservation policy will dovetail with a hatchery production policy that we're coming out with later this coming spring. The native fish conservation policy should be adopted by the commission later this winter. And we have talked to the tribes, to the IMST, to National Marine Fisheries Service, to the fishery interest groups, and they are all cautiously optimistic that the native fish conservation policy will start moving the agency towards appropriate fish management in Oregon today.
Lindsay, is this the part you were against the clubbing bill? Would that have come up against your native fish policy that you're trying to implement? Or is that going to be a different area?
Well, we were opposed to the fish clubbing bill per se. We aren't going to exterminate a fishery run as what was demonstrated at Fall Creek Hatchery. What we are going to do is we're going to integrate a fishery program into the agency and start to mirror a wild component as much as we can in the mass production hatcheries that we have. And we have some other concepts with respect to a chip hatchery, conservation hatcheries, and we're also looking at even taking it one step further and creating a mirror image of the wild setting in a hatchery setting. That those are just concepts, please understand. But the philosophy is to use the hatchery program in a way that complements and supports an endangered listed fish. By the same token, allowing the hatchery program to produce fish for people to catch. If you lose the public, and the public being the sport fishermen and the commercial fishermen, and you don't bring those people along with you in your fishery management program, then you've ultimately lost altogether. You have to bring those people along with you as you start to convert your hatchery program so that it complements the native fish. Now, that's somewhat like balancing on the head of a pin when you look at all the factors that affect that. That's the concept behind that. And I think we can do that.
How far along are you in trying to get this done? A couple of weeks, obviously, not much more than that. Or when do you think you're going to see the fruits of these efforts?
It'll be some time yet.
What does that mean?
We have already implemented some of the measures to start integrating the wild component into our hatchery programs. Now, over time, it will be accomplished. Minimum of 6 years with converting some of our hatcheries. Others, it would take longer. To implement it in a watershed base, implementing the native fish conservation policy into a watershed base statewide will probably take 10 to 15 years.
Okay.
But we do feel that by being prescriptive in nature, applying the fish to the watershed, identifying those areas where we want to manage a wild component of the fishery in a watershed and managing it specifically for that, therefore we will protect the wild component and still have a fishery with our other hatchery programs. Until we do that, then we'll just be competing against ourselves.
Okay. Keep going. This is exciting.
The third thing that we identified as a goal that we will work on in the next 2 years is that we need to review the department's policy on wildlife damage on private property. The policy was put in place about 15 years ago, and since that time, it has not had a thorough public airing. There's been a few tweaks to it as time went on, but nothing of a major review. And what I want to do is put together a work group made up of department staff and landowners to look at the issue, and of course we need sportsmen involved in that process as well, look at the issue and see if there is something more that the state of Oregon needs to do with respect to wildlife damage on private property. It may be that we have found what we can do is all that we can do today. But yet, without the discussion, without some innovative people looking at it, we won't know. So we need to have the review. Okay. And the fourth thing that we identified in the agency is that we are going to become leaders in the Oregon plan. Staff hasn't necessarily bought into the Oregon plan as such. Quite frankly, I think the department has missed a golden opportunity with respect to fish management in Oregon, where we have a supportive legislative body, a supportive governor's office, and we haven't fully endorsed or engaged ourselves in the Oregon plan. And how we are going to do that is we are going to become more proactive in looking at solving problems, solution-oriented management, and not always use the word no in our vocabulary.
That's all you're doing?
Well, those are the four goals we identified. There's a lot of other stuff going on, too.
All these goals, have you gotten far enough into them to define a set of success standards, metrics to define success? How do you know you do these things or have done them?
Chair Harper, I've also tasked staff to come up with, and by staff I mean the division directors and the regional directors, is to address performance measures within the agency. How would they measure their performance? I did not give them any more instruction than that. We got varied responses from the regions and the division directors when they came back from completing their assignment. There is good substance to it, but it's not clearly tied to the strategic plan of the agency, nor are they all clearly tied to the benchmarks identified in Oregon, and not necessarily tied just completely to the budget. Now, those things have to be accomplished.
So what you're saying is
it's an issue
government of business as usual.
It's an issue of training.
Okay.
And they have not adopted the concept. And I have Jeff Tryons from Progress Board scheduled to come and give us a class on performance measures on September 20th. And from that point forward, we will then set up some meetings with Paul Seibert from the Legislative Fiscal Office, who is also involved in performance measures. And we will start identifying how we measure the success of this agency.
Yeah, good. That's an organizational cultural change. It's hard to implement. It takes a little bit of time, but good. How about the move? What's the move mean to you?
The move, there are two options before us. We're exploring two methods to accomplish that task. One is if we sell the building to a private party, we don't know when the move would occur because we don't know when the building would sell. And so therefore we're kind of would be, you know, posting a date when we'd move without really knowing. The building might sell in a month. It might sell in 18 months, 24 months. Who knows? Depending on a buyer that would come along and want the building in Portland. I guess you can see how that would create a real problem with any continuity with respect to planning and moving the agency to Salem. The other option that we have, and we're just starting some of the discussions, is the feasibility of the state buying the building. And we have a planned move with a given date to Salem, and then the state sell the building after we complete the move.
So both of those are on the table?
Both of those are on the table. We had discussions as early as last week about that. We need to work out some numbers with respect to costs that have not been done yet, and we'll have another meeting in the next couple of weeks to take another look at that, those two options.
Okay. You got any more for us or that you wanted to tell us before we start asking a few more questions? Or I don't want to interrupt you particularly.
No, those are the major points that I wanted to cover.
It's good if I said if you could just figure out a way to define that you are a leader in the Oregon plan and measure it, it'd make your life easier. Things like that. Jason, you have to.
I've got three areas I'd like to just ask a couple of questions about in each of those areas. And Lindsay, I'm really happy that you're here, and this is pretty exciting. I think for you, and especially the turning point of where the agency is. Three areas I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you first about government-to-government relations. I think that's a big part of your job with respect to managing fish, managing outdoor possibilities, recreation possibilities, wildlife. I want to talk to you a little bit about, and you hit on. I've been taking a lot of notes, and you hit on two of them already, some of your overall goals, and then I'm going to end by talking to you briefly about somebody that you and I had a conversation about last week. First of all, government to government, a couple of sessions ago, there was a bill that went through here that was 3609. There's a lot of heartburn attached to the bill. Eventually, for a variety of reasons, it passed both chambers unanimously. The bill had to do with wild fish policy and working with the agency, working in tandem with many of our tribes within the borders of the state. The key word on that whole bill was the phrase, notwithstanding. Notwithstanding the federal wild fish policy, in essence, notwithstanding the National Marine Fisheries Service wild fish policy, the state of Oregon, in conjunction with the tribes, would work towards production populations, work towards fish, work towards habitat, et cetera, et cetera. For a while, when that bill passed, we had a hard time getting that thing off of getting it started. Eventually, it started to go. Could you comment on how you think that should continue on and what you believe the role is or your philosophy of working government to government?
Well, I think Chair Harper, Senator Atkinson, with respect to government, you're talking about the relationship between state government and tribal governments. Is that correct?
Correct.
Well, the tribes of Oregon, the Columbia River tribes particularly, have treaty rights with respect to fish management on the Columbia River and its tributaries above Bonneville Dam. Both subsistence and for commercial harvest. Therefore, they naturally, by treaty right, are partners in management of fishery throughout the basin. That's how I see that. The point I want to make with the native fish conservation policy is it drives us into a coalition with the tribes to make a determination as to how we manage those different tributaries. Whether we set aside a stream strictly for a wild component and not alter that, such as the John Day system, which has not been supplemented with hatchery stocks, or we take a system such as the Deschutes River and we decide what the mitigation goals are for lost habitat through hydropower production, and we raise or lower hatchery production in that system. Or we develop tributaries below the Pelton Round Butte project so that they support more of a wild component. But that has to be worked out collectively with that tribe. And we have to be very mindful of the fact that that tribe has a treaty right with respect to access to those fish. And so that, therefore, they and the state of Oregon have a vested interest in how those fish are to be managed.
What excites me is when our state as a state can say, we can do this on our own. We can do this within the borders of our state. We can do it either working with the tribes. We can do it working with farmers and ranchers. We can do it ourselves. That's what attracts me. What makes me upset to a certain degree and also gets me involved in politics is when the federal government says, like in the case of Klamath Falls, you can't do this, you don't know what you're doing, and we'll do it for you, essentially. And so just as a philosophy, I like it when Oregon, as Oregon can, either restore fish, can manage, work with agriculture interests, can work on habitat for wildlife. And so can you just give me a little bit more of your philosophy with regards to that? Or did I just define your... I know that's a big, I'm asking a big thing here, but this is the mental gymnastics I go through. Is what can we do as a state that is better than what they'll limit us to do?
What is it that the federal government? How can we go beyond the federal government?
Federal government to act? Or are you going to do it on your own?
Well, I think Oregon. I've always said that Oregon needs to take care of Oregon's problems. And if we have an issue locally, it's not going to be solved in Washington, D.C. It's going to be solved in Oregon. And I've always felt that way. We can come up with a better solution than people from outside, given the guidelines set forth, particularly so with the Endangered Species Act. We'll come up with a solution.
I was excited when you said that did I hear you right, you're going to have citizens involved in some of the review? In your opening remarks, you said something about having more citizen input? Did you say that, or was I just waiting to hear?
Well, citizen input with respect to the native fish conservation policy?
Or actually, are you going to have more citizen input with regards to rules? And you said something about that in your opening testimony. What was it?
I don't. I don't recall the specific subject. With respect to rules, it's pretty well set in place now as to how rules are passed. How do we develop rules?
Let me
predator damage.
Oh, you're talking about predator damage.
Oh, yeah. Well, with respect to the wildlife damage policy, what I want to do is collect landowners, both from timber, agriculture, farming, and the ranching community, as well as sportsmen, because they have a role to play in this as well, and they have a stake to play in this as well. And
one more question, and I'll be done. Lindsay, last week I had the privilege of spending a week with a guy from Kansas who's in your same situation. He took over an embattled agency. It was actually in their state. It's Wildlife and Parks. It's two in ours, but it's one there. Embattled. Legislature had a bad relationship. Money was upside down. I mean, just a mess. And so I was asking myself, how did you actually turn this around? How did you turn around the culture of not only the institution, but how did you gain back credibility with people that you serve? And he said essentially it was based on five things. One, he says he had citizens get involved. I mean, you alluded to that when you said, we're not going to use the word no as much, but he had citizens involved. Secondly, he worked overtime to get more sportsmen's access. Well, it was opportunity was the second word that he worked on. He tried to connect that to a third thing, which was tourism. He actually worked with the agency to connect to tourism. Tourism in that state, wildlife either viewing, fishing, or hunting, is up 80%. Then he worked on just overall credibility and what was a clearly defined conservation ethic for that agency. It was a very inspiring individual to be around. As I told you, he's up for the job of U.S. Fish and Wildlife now, as doing a turnaround on that state. And so I'm kind of, I guess, overly tuned into what you're about to do right now. And those are five things I thought they were just incredible. A guy who just went through what you just went are about to go into, and those were his five recipes for success. So you can comment on that. It's more of a statement than a question, but I was excited about it.
Do a good job of moving to Washington.
I don't think I'll want to go to Washington. I like Oregon.
Senator Durfee, got anything?
No, I think Lindsay would do a good job in what he's gone through our trials here. But I did still want to point out that Lindsay doesn't have to answer to us. He only has to answer the commission. And I would hope that in the future, as we go along and get involved in this, that we have a better relationship with the commission than we've had, because they're the ones that really make the decisions. He doesn't have to please us. He has to please the commission. But it's up to us to work with the commission and make sure that they follow what the legislative group wants.
That's an excellent point. That's just part of the problem we have with our structure. We can complain to you fairly quickly, so you gotta take the brunt of it. But I like everybody in the panel. I'm excited. I think this is the right decision, the right person at the right time. So I'm really looking forward to this over the next couple of years. But we could probably spend another 10 or 20 hours jawing about some of these things, but we'll... With that, Senator Atkinson.
Mr. Chair, I would move the recommendation of the confirmation of the appointment of Lindsay Ball to the Director of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Senator Atkinson moves to recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Lindsay Ball to the Director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Further discussion? Objections? Hearing none? So ordered.
With that, we are.
Adjourned. I'm unadjourned. Yeah. Just for the record, we're going to put off until the next meeting the Janine Sawwasser State Fish and Wildlife Commission and the whole Quality Education Commission, all those 11 people, for the purposes of caucus discussion. Or 10, yeah, okay. So with that, we are really adjourned. Can we sign this in?